you know, we're at 25% of our goal of the 10-year-old plan, and but we're admired regionally and nationally and internationally. Maybe 25% of our goal is close to where it needs to be. Maybe the Badgers should say 30% instead of 75%. I think that we have a good park system in Portland. I've been here since the 60s. I grew up in Fernhill Park. Now I play in Grant Park. Grant Park's an issue for another day. The emails that I've got from city staff to hold the developer accountable and put this SDC on the backs of the developers is wrong. It's really, in my mind, it's the people that are coming, where the people that are here, you know, post 20 years ago, paid no SDC for parks. This should be a tax or a levy or a bond. Keep the current SDC in place and pass a levy or a bond. Thank you.
Commissioners, my name is Ted Gilbert. I'm in the commercial real estate business, and I'm a believer that parks and open space are and economic development are mutually dependent, not mutually exclusive. As some of you, I think, know, I'm currently working on a proposal with some of the people in this room to create a fairly substantial open space in one of the most park-deficient areas of the city. I'm encouraged that this proposal does recognize that not all areas of Portland are the same by differentiating the central city, but it's with this one-size-fits-all approach for the rest of the city that I have serious concern, and I'm concerned will prove to be counterproductive to the goals of both open space and economic development. If we take a look at the most recent example of an urban renewal district that has worked, the River District, we see that when it's reached that critical tipping point where the private sector will risk its capital, it not only can turn into a vital, thriving neighborhood, but it can become a cash cow for the community in terms of TIF generation. The city of Portland has three urban renewal districts that have been struggling to reach that tipping point for years: Interstate, Gateway, and Lance. I'm most familiar with the latter two, and it's the two that are struggling the most right now. If we take a look at Gateway, Portland's only designated regional center outside the central business district, if we were trying to create a quality urban development there, developers will tell you that the rents and or prices that you can generate there don't justify the expenditure and risk of that capital based on today's costs. If at one time we substantially increase residential SDCs, create a new SDC for commercial space, not to mention the excise tax on construction for new schools, what we're doing is stacking the deck and significantly increasing the odds that they'll never hit that tipping point, and in so squandered a tremendous opportunity for the entire region. I believe that with a little more thought and a little more time, we could craft a more nuanced approach that would leverage both open space and economic development. I can think of some ideas to do that. I'm sure others can. And I would hope that the commission, the councilors will encourage us and staff to work together to do that. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Our next three are Linda LaViolette, Craig Davis, and Justin Cutler. They'll be followed by Corky Collier, Amanda Fritz, and Jim McCarley.
Commissioners, my name is Linda LaViolette, and I'm here representing the Portland Parks Foundation, and I am its executive director. Today, we are discussing a rare opportunity to use an appropriate funding mechanism to ensure that our park system is adequate to meet the needs of the future. Indeed, the Portland Parks Foundation was created because growth of our park system has not kept pace with the growth of our city. Park SDCs are a way for new growth to help pay for its own impact. Our citizens have made it clear that parks are essential to neighborhood livability, and we need ways to create new parks in areas that are experiencing growth. We urge you to carefully consider the issue. A substantial increase in the park SDC recovery rate is needed. Adding non-residential SDCs and a tiered fee structure in the central city also make good sense. Holly Farm Park, which opened this summer, is a great example of the use of SDCs and also of the need for an increase in their rate. Holly Farm Park serves the West Portland Park neighborhood of 4,000 people, 1,000 of them children. many of whom literally had no outdoor place to play. Half the neighborhood lives in apartments, and almost half live in households below Portland's median income. SDCs did help buy the land, providing 50% of the cost, and Portland Parks Foundation and state funds did the rest. This public-private partnership saved the only piece of undeveloped and nearly flat land for a park in that neighborhood. There were no city funds for park planning, design, and development, a case of more funds needed by SDCs. Again, the Portland Parks Foundation and the state stepped up and provided the money so that this neighborhood would no longer go without a park. Significant increase in SDCs will make sure other growing neighborhoods are served. We at the Portland Parks Foundation want to help, but the need is much greater than we can possibly address without more public support. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Hi, my name is Craig Davis. I'm with GBD Architects. I'm also a BOMA board member. I'm here. BOMA has asked me to come to give you some information on the First and Main office building. They've asked me to present the costs of this SDC on that building. First and Main is a 16-story, 360,000-square-foot office building with 294 parking stalls underground. The permit cost on First and Main is $1,219,000. I calculated the cost on First and Main for this SDC fee, it is an additional $393,600, very close to what Riley had described. The total permit cost then would be $1,612,600. If you look at the cost of the SDC fees on this project, they equate to about three-quarters of the total permit cost. The BES sanitary cost, or SDC fee, is $234,465. The BES storm SDC fee is $4,840. The PDOT transfer, or the PDOT fee, is $286,887. The water department is $44,686. The new Parks Department SDC would be $393,600, or $100,000 more than any other SDC fee. At BOMA, we understand that the Parks Department, as we understand the Parks Department's proposal, it would not affect existing buildings. As a member of the BOMA Nonconforming Development Committee, we also want to make sure that that doesn't go any farther than that. We see existing buildings are currently paying approximately 36% of their permit fees or of their construction costs to get rid of nonconforming use issues. So adding another SDC fee to that would be a very difficult thing for us to deal with. As a BOMA board member and chairman of the BOMA Nonconforming Committee, we ask that you carefully consider the effects of the SDC will have on the growth and in our central city. We urge you to consider lowering the cost recovery target and to look carefully at the indirect effects the systems development charge will have on development efforts in Portland. Thank you.
My name is Justin Cutler. I live at 212 Northeast 87th in the Montebello neighborhood. I have no affiliation. Thank you for Mayor Potter and the commissioners for taking public comment today. I'd like to make four brief points. As you're probably aware of, areas in Portland, specifically outer East Portland, due to past decisions to not recover the full cost of construction parks, are park deficient. Through SDCs, I would encourage the council to make a different decision this time around and support quality of life and economic development through an investment in future parks by increasing and recovering at minimum 75% of the cost for new parks. SDCs will provide a more sustainable source of funding for construction of parks, new parks. Currently, the Parks Bureau is using operating dollars to construct new parks in addition to the small SDC fee that's being collected. SDCs will provide a key funding source to alleviate the need for the operating funds to provide parks for growth. As a current resident, I would hate to see Portland parks decline due to growth-related expansion. Growth is inevitable, and growth needs to pay for growth. Now, you may hear from a select group of stakeholders that your fees are too high. However, the Home Builders Association supported a proposal in the city of Gresham in 2006 that increased parks SDCs from $1,067 to $3,185. That's close to a 300% increase in the current city boundaries, and established new fees in Pleasant Valley Growth Area at $6,603, and $7,299 in the Springwater Growth Area. If you'd like a copy of the letter, I have brought it with me and have it today. It is signed by Misty Stagel, Political Affairs Director, April 3, 2006. According to the City of Gresham, additionally, the City of Gresham adopted a non-residential fee based on employee counts on new buildings and tenant improvements for the rate of $35 for the current city. Pleasant Valley is $115 and Springwater is $152 per employee. It is important to note that the City of Gresham made the decision to recover 90% of the cost of its parks in the growth areas. Fourth, business industry may not like the cost per employee for parks. In light of Ms. Dobson's comments on active living, I wonder how much higher the healthcare costs would be without parks and trails for their employees to use in their off hours. Maybe someday we'll all see the small investment in parks as a way to curb the healthcare costs and reduce obesity. That concludes my points in support for the parks proposal before you. Thank you again for hearing public comment.
Thank you.
Our next three are Corky Collier, Amanda Fritz, and Jim McCarley, I believe is the last name. They'll be followed by Mark Hope, Martin Medeiros, and Barbara Quinn.
Good afternoon. My name is Corky Collier. I'm a member of the Parks SDC Update Task Force and also Executive Director of the Columbia Corridor Association. In the interest of time, I'll skip through the niceties and the preface and get right to the heart of the matter as I see it. My basic concern is whether a higher Parks SDC recovery rate is good for the prosperity of the city. Increased prosperity means more time to enjoy our parks, and that's what really counts. If we can have a 100% recovery rate and still increase the prosperity of this city without pushing growth to the outer, to the suburbs, I'll jump up and down and support it. That would be wonderful. But there's currently an intimidating number of new expenses being placed on the backs of businesses, all of which are well-intentioned. In most cases, CCA has not opposed these new expenses. In some, we've strongly supported them. We're also a supporter of last year's parks bond measure for Metro. But we all know that there's currently a bias against development within the city of Portland. This additional fee will only make the bias stronger. It's an appropriate time to step back and analyze the potential impacts of all the new expenses. CCA recommends that you assemble a task force, call it an economic task force, consisting of perhaps city staff, some business representatives, most importantly, an independent, very good economist that can look at all the different fees and anticipate the impacts, good and bad, of them. We also, secondly, ask that you establish a non-residential SDC fee, but delay implementation of that until this economic task force can do its work. Alternatively, if you really want to establish that task force or want to establish the fees, do so at the current residential recovery rate. Third, we ask that you allow transferability of the SDC credits in a fashion similar to the way we transfer transportation SDC credits. Working together, if we do it cautiously, we can build our businesses, build our cities, build our parks. Thanks.
Good afternoon. I'm Amanda Fritz, speaking only for myself. If we don't have enough money for transportation from systems development charges, we can wait and improve the streets later. In fact, that's what we've done. And then we can figure out a way to pay to retrofit, and we can improve the streets later. If we don't have enough money for parks to buy new parks, the land is gone. We're not making more of it, and it's going to be very difficult to retrofit parks into fully built-out neighborhoods. So we need a more realistic level of development paying its way right now. Housing costs are high, but keeping park system development charges low is not the answer. If you doubt the value of park system development charges, come to the Holly Farm Park in Southwest Portland. Parks provide joy to city residents, and every city resident deserves a park near their home. It has, I think, been an exemplary public process, a very long public process, and I have done my share of criticizing parks public processes and saying that there hasn't been enough outreach. On this one, I've gotten to the point of deleting emails because I've had so many of them from various different sources begging me to come to meetings, more meetings about this. So I credit the Parks Bureau for doing that. And Commissioner Saltzman, I greatly honor your leadership on this. It's difficult to propose a significant increase in the level of charges, and you have taken the lead on this. I hope you will hold steady with the 75%, and I just think you've done a great job on this, so thank you very much. I believe that we should accept the report and support the 75% level, and then as some of the other testifiers have suggested, look holistically at the whole system. But let's not continue to disadvantage parks.
Commission members, Jim McCauley here representing Home Builder Association Metro Portland. I'll focus in really just on our recommendations, but the affordability issue is something that's very real to this community. I think it half or partially explains why we have looked at or seen a population increase in this city, an increase that hasn't really included families, which is indicative of why we've seen a population of students go down dramatically over the last decade. We had a chance to participate in this public process, like several people in the audience as well, and found their process to actually be quite transparent and very good in terms of trying to reach out and trying to get as many comments as possible. I think for us this comes down to really taking a step back for parks. We think they need to take a look at surplus lands out there. I think those in many cases present some opportunities for neighborhood parks at far greater values than a $3 to $4 million rate that's in the formula. I think there are other opportunities to look at actual parks that other bureaus have, whether it's water or hydro parks, or whether some of the other bureaus also have parks as well. I think that all needs to be physically in the calculation. And I think more importantly, look at this from a personal standpoint. Portland Public Schools offers many opportunities out there and in many cases do present the neighborhood park option for many families. I live in Southwest, so Jackson Middle School and Stevenson are the most identifiable school properties there. I think there are many opportunities for some capacity investments in those areas that would not require additional park expansion, but would be able to at least capture some efficiencies and some opportunities that would, at least in a system that we don't have an unlimited source of revenue, and help us deal a little bit more with the affordability issues that we are facing. Thank you.
Thank you.
Our next three are Mark Hope, Martin Medeiros, and Barbara Quinn. About Marianne Schwab and Michelle Bussard. Beverly Bookin.
Here's Michelle.
Oh, no, somebody.
Go ahead.
I get to start. Thank you for having me. My name is Barbara Quinn. I'm the interim chair of Cathedral Park Neighborhood Association in St. John's. And I'm here to support the SDC, mainly because I live in a neighborhood that has a great deal of industrial and commercial area, as well as newly zoned high-density residential. And we do have good parks, but we have some essential resources that cannot be replaced, such as different types of natural areas that are not common necessarily to other parts of Portland. And so I'm here to support my neighbors in not only improving the existing parks we have for the high density development that we are getting, that does involve residential that does not have a yard, and also to promote the protection of the natural areas in the neighborhood as well, within the parks and also the green spaces outside the parks. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Barbara.
Good afternoon, gentlemen, serving the council. My name is Marianne Schwab. I'm speaking for myself. Too many committees to list in 2 minutes. Please remember, Commissioner Salzman, prior to purchasing land or anything for new parks, remember we have a contract due December 31st on the Washington Monroe project. We've been 30 years working towards that recreational center, and we just want to keep the word out. The reason we're not here wearing our WAMO buttons today is because the city keeps hiring our Southeast Uplift staff. First Elizabeth, then Steve, and now Afifa. It's getting old, you know. I mean, you're hiring the best of the best, by the way. Okay. Now, the second thing here is please help me understand, does this SDC 75% apply to new condos construction taking place in my neighborhood along Belmont, along the transportation corridors? And if so, can we use those monies to pay for staff to help programs for our school out program? And we're planning to use it at the Sunnyside United Methodist Church Gymnasium. That is, once we can get that roof fixed. I have a source of money, people. Grab your pencil. Please vote daily for hgtv.com. Hit search. Change the world. We can vote the next 10 days until December 21st. And the winners here will be Sunnyside Grade School gets a covered classroom. The Children's Club across the street will get the gym fixed with a new roof and new windows, what have you. And more importantly, a needy family needing ADA rehab will get their house done. So again, I'm really happy that the neighborhood needs are back. Remember, it took me 8.5 years applying for neighborhood need grants to get the 2.4 acres at Sunnyside School, get the blacktop off and put the grass down. And it's a Class C classification park with a Class A use. We need our inner city neighborhood park. And I appreciate in closing Sam Adams in the ladder crosswalks with his safe routes to school. Not only is it easier for our children to get to and from school, they get to and from the park. Thank you for that, Sam. And Randy, vote every day. Thank you.
Thanks. She just threw that in at the last minute, so you wouldn't feel bad. Go ahead.
Hi, I'm Michelle Bessard. I'm the executive director of the Friends of Forest Park. And I am humbled by really everything I've heard prior to this point, almost to the point of feeling as if my own remarks are superfluous. And so the question that I kept coming up with as I sat in the back is, what is the cost of not doing this? Presently, we have an extraordinary quality of life here in Portland, and over again, it is our parks, our natural areas, and our open spaces that are pointed to, among other incredible characteristics such as our arts and culture. Currently, so much of the new development advertises the accessibility of parks and natural areas as part of what is the attraction. Employers and employees are attracted to this area because of the extraordinary parks and natural areas that we have. And so I ask, what is the cost of not doing this? It's extraordinary. Tipping points are also interesting things. Can you imagine what might happen if currently underserved areas such as Lentz and Gateway and Interstate that we've heard about actually had equitable access to natural areas and parks, and people bought into those areas, what might happen to their incomes, their quality of life 5 or 10 years from now? I suggest to you it would be changed dramatically in the quality of their life and in the appreciation of their homes because they had access to natural areas and parks. So consider that when you consider your vote. What happens if we don't do this?
Carla.
Last two are Martin Medeiros and Beverly Bookin.
You go first.
Gosh, limiting an attorney to talk for 2 minutes is torture. My name is Martin Medeiros. I'm a partner at Sweeter Medeiros Haver, a law firm for the business of the innovative and creative classes. I'm a member of the Portland's Small Business Advisory Council and the Citizens Review Board. I am here today in opposition of the new Parks SDC, and there are 10 major reasons why. First, the methodology has been criticized by the Portland Bureau of Development Services. Second, the analysis has been not preceded by doing an inventory of parks land, which is a good place to start. And during last year's budget cycle, we talked about doing things like with water on parks land. Third, this did not come before the Small Business Advisory Council until very recently, another process issue. Secondly, quality of life has a lot of elements. One of those is a job. Parks, certainly the amenities are a big part of that, but we're not sure at what level we should be funding this right now, or we'd like to hear more data basically on that. Fifth, there is no plan or sunset end date for how much land can be acquired, at least not in the proposal we've seen. Sixth, this focuses on downtown. It ignores other regions such as North Portland. Although some unnamed park deficient areas were alluded to, we don't know what those are at this time. Seventh, parks won big in the budgetary process, and that's kind of where we think we should put this. Get in the budget process so we have more data, more economic data on what this will mean to jobs, employment, because we have above average unemployment in the city, and that's the 8 point at $410 per employee. This will hit small locally owned businesses the most, and much of the businesses owned will be downtown will be Starbucks and Hooters, and national chains that can actually allocate fees across their entire portfolio, not small local owned businesses. And I'm going to be respective of time. My other 2 points are down there, but basically this is non-financeable. This has to come out of working capital on the front side of the transaction. And lastly, this will not increase employment. It will not hinder business establishment. It will not help businesses grow. In conclusion, I ask you to take some time, hear some more of the economic impact. Thank you very much for letting me go a little bit over. Thank you.
Thanks. Beth?
Good afternoon. I'm Beverly Book, and I'm the Executive Director of the Commercial Real Estate Economic Coalition, or CREEC, a coalition of 12 companies, trade associations, and business organizations involved in the development, sales, and management of retail, office, industrial, and institutional projects here in the Portland metropolitan region. And in that capacity, I served on the SDC, on the Parks SDC Task Force. CREEC recognizes the policy and legal basis for extending the Park SDC to non-residential development to spread the capital costs of building new park and recreational facilities. However, as many of my colleagues from the task force have testified already this afternoon, we are concerned about the proposed 75% capture rate. As you'll see in a moment, the SDC of this magnitude may have significant impact on development feasibility, particularly in the central city. And this is before we consider it in with the cumulative impacts of several other taxes and fees either recently adopted or under consideration. For this reason, we would prefer a delay in the decision to implement the SDC on non-residential development until the implications of these cumulative impacts can be assessed. However, if the council decides to proceed, we urge you to consider a lower recovery rate, depressing the difference between the central city and non-central city rates, and or placing a development cap on the cost per project. To illustrate the potential impacts, I have calculated the potential Parks SDC on TMT Development's new proposed 33-story tower called the Park Avenue West Tower, located on Park Block 4. Essentially, the city has approved for TMT to transfer all of the above-grade density from Park Block 5, which Mr. Moyers has donated to the city for a new park, to Park Block 4 so that the resulting building will have all of the development that the two blocks would have had they developed independently of one another. Because Mr. Moyer, because of his generous donation, very likely this project will be given a credit by the Parks Bureau. But let's assume for the moment that it's a freestanding project. According to my calculations, using the rates in the proposal, the Parks SDC for the tower would be $856,000. Will a fee of this size cause TMT to take their building and build it elsewhere? Obviously not. With all of the other cumulative taxes and fees, hurt the development feasibility of this project? Very likely. It is why we wish you to consider your decision carefully. And finally, in addition to my testimony this afternoon, I am submitting a letter from Bob Lefebvre, who is an experienced retail broker and is the current president of the Commercial Association of Realtors. He has noted in his letter that right now the retail vacancy rate in downtown Portland is the highest of 7 sub-districts in the region. His concern is that if retail rates go up in the central city for any reason, that retailers are then forced to increase their sales per square feet to compensate. His concern is that many local retailers simply do not have the horsepower to increase their sales and that they will be edged out by national chains which have greater name identification and higher advertising budgets. So again, maybe an unintended consequence of this SDC. Thank you for the opportunity today to share our perspective with you.
All right.
Thank you.
Questions or comments for staff?
So I wanted to follow up because I don't understand how the exemption that we talked about with staff right at the end of their testimony works. So what Matt said was there is currently a Parks SDC exemption for those who are at 100% median family income and below. And I'm just curious about the mechanics of that before I ask about the policy of that, the mechanics of that. How does that work if a developer builds a new house, is hit with a system development fee? How does the exemption work then for one who is 100% of median family income or below?
Right. The program is actually, the exemption program is run by PDC. They administer that. So they apply for, the developer or applicant would apply for affordable housing exemption that would be granted based on the pro forma that he provides. And then if it, the idea would be obviously it would sell at the mean or under. There would be no SDC charge at that point. If it sells over the affordable rate, there's a lien on the property that would require the buyer to pay the SDC.
So at the time of purchase, there is some income means done on the purchaser.
Yes.
To determine whether or not they're 100% median family income or below. If they are, they get a refund or something of whatever.
Well, it's basically if they qualify for the loan on the property. So the property has to be something that they'd be able to qualify for at that lower $66,900. If a bank will loan them the money on that, then basically that would be considered an affordable housing. And, you know, okay. I have to be really honest, I don't know all the mechanics
of it. So could it be that somebody that made more than that bought the house would also get the exemption? If you're saying that it's just based on the value of the house?
It's not based on the value of the house. It's based on the, as far as I know, it's based on the qualification of the applicant or the, you know, the, if the applicant has, if their mean family income is at 100% or below, they would be able to purchase that house, whatever the price might be. If they can qualify for the house, they get the. There would be no charge for them because you're trying to meet the needs of the person, not necessarily the cost of the house.
So, on the policy side, what's the policy reason for a person that's at median family income not paying an SDC charge?
This policy was set by the council several years back on, it's basically the similar sort of exemption that are applied to, I believe, water.
You just had a task force, didn't you? Didn't you re-explore the basis for this exemption?
We accepted it and as being what was appropriate. We looked at it, but we accepted that.
Okay.
Since it was a status quo, we didn't question that whether it was right or not. It may not be. It may be flawed, and we'd be certainly willing to look at it.
I think it is.
My understanding, Commissioner Leonard, is all SDCs fall into this category in the city.
Well, I have a problem with that. As I said in my opening remarks, and I sincerely mean this, I mean, I was on the Ways and Means in the legislature for a long time, and one rapidly comes to the conclusion when you're sitting on this side, listening to that side, that the best tax is one somebody else pays. And with all due respect, the buttons on your shirts make the point. And those that say it should be 100% put an exclamation after the point because you don't have to pay it. But the Ferris tax is the one people aren't wild about, and that's one everybody pays. So I'm just really cautious about exemptions for anyone, for any tax at all, not just SDCs. And it bothers me if we don't have a rational reason for them. So I would just say, I mean, I can do this now or when we vote. Are we going to vote to accept the report?
Yeah.
Or, okay, because I mean, I'm basically going to, I'm giving my closing remarks. So, I mean, we can go ahead and vote and I'll
yeah,
do
that's
that
fine.
Then. Unless you guys have any questions.
So I just want to make clear I heard you, the 100% median family income exemption applies to all SDCs charged by the city?
I believe so. Parks? There may be one that doesn't, but.
My understanding is all SDCs.
That's news to me, and I'll look into that. That's the
Please do.
I'm going to tell you, I'm not sure that that's accurate. Now, if you're, what you're saying is for PDC loans, what I heard you say was PDC loans. Are you saying they administer whether or not
administer.
They administer the private
right.
sector
right.
loans.
They administer. Yeah. Right.
That's interesting that I hadn't heard that before.
Right. Well, the argument that was given to us to include that exemption was that water, BES, and transportation all provided that exemption.
Yeah, I need to check that out.
Yeah. Right. We'd love to, you know, negotiate, but.
Any other questions? All right, thank you.
Thank you. So I would just, you know, remind the council and those listening that the next steps will be to, for me to meet with each one of you individually. Also, we would have some additional public hearings and the task force may have thought they were discharged, but they're going to have at least one more mind-numbing meeting to review a proposal that I would come back with in light of today's hearing and subsequent conversations with my colleagues. And with that said, I guess I would urge we accept the report.
Let's call the roll.
Adams?
Well, transportation just spent a year and a half going through an update to our SDCs, and it was mind-numbing, bone-chilling work, but very necessary. I want to acknowledge and thank all the task force members for their work, park staff, Matt, and the leadership of Commissioner Saltzman in this effort. This is it's always difficult. I do believe in the concept that growth should help pay for growth. That is a very smart concept that has been embraced by most communities in Oregon. So looking at the underlying issues in this and some of the questions that are bound to require further study at this point in the process, I look forward to being an active participant in that, and I'm happy to get that part of this process going. Aye.
Leonard?
So I too believe in SDCs and have supported them in the past and voted for increases in the past, but I like them to be defensible and explainable. A couple of fundamental concerns that need to be addressed for me is, and I was happy to hear Zeri address this because I raised this early on in some discussions. Martin Medeiros raised it. Is Martin still here? Raised it in his testimony as well, which I appreciate, and he identified that the analysis done by Parks of needs did not include current lands that are considered to be parks. And in fact, there are five of them that I know when I looked at the map that are not included on the inventory of parks. They happen to be owned by the Water Bureau, but they're every bit as much as open space as parks as any other one. There's one in outer northeast in Hazelwood community. There's one in southwest in the Multnomah neighborhood. One in inner northeast at Sabin, one in southwest at Hillsdale, and one in outer southeast, Brentwood, Darlington, and I think there'll be about that many in the next 2 years that are planning to be open. I just met with the group who were advocating for some help from the city in developing. I think all of us either have or will be meeting with the same group, a development of Marysville Schools Park land open space next to it. They'd like some help from the city to help parks develop that into a park for the neighborhood. So those are six instances of open spaces that I have personal knowledge of that should be on the inventory that aren't, I suspect, because I know that, and I know so little about what's going on in every part of the city that there are probably others. So I'm going to want to have a solid inventory of lands, and not just Portland parks and recreation lands, but open spaces that Portlanders consider to be parks in their neighborhood that may be identified as something else but still used as parks. As revealed by my question, that we have a current policy that says people that earn 100% of median family income and below exempts them from paying SDCs is not in and of itself defensible. There are a lot of things that are that exist that are not defensible that we need to look at. This is one of them. Again, it's a very unpopular position I'm taking. I mean, for a politician to sit up and basically say, I'm speaking up for people that aren't here yet and don't vote here yet, and actually challenging those of you that are advocates of parks to also commit to looking at raising funds that touch each of us and not just those that aren't here yet is not the most popular thing to do, but it is the fairest thing to do. And I believe in fairness, and I believe that creating parks in neighborhoods does all the things that the advocates said. I believe in, and to that end, I actually agree with the point that says we should implement today the commercial exemption, at least the rate starting today until this all flushes out, that we're currently charging for residential rates. I mean, it's inexcusable that commercial properties aren't paying anything at all. What the rate ultimately should be, I don't know. But I do think that it's been a mistake not charging commercial properties. That's all kind of in my way of saying that I really appreciate all the hard work everybody's done. But I will tell you that we need to have a more balanced approach before I can support this. It has to be something that on its merit makes sense, that is defensible. It's not defensible to have the lowest SDCs in the region. It's not defensible not to charge commercial. It is equally not defensible to then rush to have the highest SDCs in the region and have the highest commercial rates. What that is in between that, I am not sure. But all I know is this doesn't feel like it's balanced, is all I'm saying. And I would like to trust that all of you will hear that and take that message to heart and come back with a balanced approach that everybody thinks doesn't necessarily get everyone where they want to be, but certainly is better than where we're at. So having said that, I will support accepting this report with those qualifications. Aye.
Saltzman.
Well, just with respect to the hydro parks, I think you may recall Zeri Santner at the outset, and this emanates from conversation you and I had a few days ago. To the extent the hydro parks are indeed permanent open space, we will count those against the inventory of need. So that will be done. I want to thank everybody for their testimony. It was very good and useful to us. I want to particularly thank the task force for all their hard work, and the parks and recreation staff who work on this, and Matt Grum in my office, and our consultants too. And our work is not done. We will continue to try to come up with something that we will come up with something that I think responds to the needs of assuring that we have necessary parks, open spaces throughout our city to meet the demand that those meet, but also to recognize economic impacts. So we'll strive to develop a proposal or come back with a proposal that will be at least my best shot at that after talking to you and further public hearings and further task force meetings. So please to vote aye.
All right, that concludes the council business. We are adjourned.
Thanks. Thank you.